Thank you very much, Bob Kessler. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon, sort of a gloomy Tuesday. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about brackets. Dick Vitale will be along. And after that, Philip Weiss of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. He'll talk. Vitale will tell you what to put in your brackets, and Weiss will tell you how not to get caught while you're working. First, though, on Tuesdays, we talk to John Najarian about all things Wall Street. John, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Stephen.
And I can't help but notice that your Twitter handle has changed. You are now at John Najarian. You've got some news for us?
Well, yeah. We about a year and a half ago, we sold the majority of our option monster and trade monster to a private equity firm in New York. And now my brother Pete and I are pretty much doing wealth management services through Najarian Family Office. And because of some of the regulations of that particular space, I decided to drop the option monster handle and just go with John, J-O-N, Najarian as my Twitter handle. And luckily, anybody who was following me before, Twitter was nice enough to migrate them all over to my new handle.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's not too shabby. I didn't realize that was a service they provided. But people who don't follow you should find you today at John Najarian, and they should follow you. All right, what's going on with Valeant here, this pharmaceutical company?
Wow. Well, you know, Bill Ackman is a brilliant investor, and he's done a great job for his investors over the years. But he's had a couple real high-profile cases lately where, in one case, he was against Herbalife, and, of course, Carl Icahn stacked up on the other side of him. He was betting for the share price to decline in that case, so he shorted it. And in this case, Valeant, he has been a big proponent of this particular drug company that's more or less a consolidator of other drugs and various things that people buy all the time. And they've rolled that up into one big company. VRX is the symbol. But as you've already cited, that company has had a world of issues lately. And today, on a warning about how they're doing going forward, the stock traded down to $35 a share this morning. It was a drop of nearly 50%.
Wow.
On that drop.
And so they're talking about they may face default in the future. Could you explain that for me?
Well, they don't think so. They're saying right now, some people worried about that, clearly, and that's why the stock was down so much. But Valeant and a couple of the firms that have come to their defense today say that their bonds, because just like anybody, when they do a takeover of a company, they normally use a certain amount of their own stock and a certain amount of bonds, which is more or less borrowing money from the public. They are a serial acquisition party, that is Valeant, and so people said, well, what's their debt look like? How are the bonds doing right now? And they still do make an awful lot of money. I mean, even with the guidance cut as much as they did, they're still on track to, they say now, to make $2.40, $2.50 a year. That's the bottom line, the profit number. That wouldn't be too bad for a $37 stock, which is where shares are trading right now. So I think people are looking at it hard today because of this massive drop. I think it's overdone, Stephen. But again, this is not one for a first-time investor. This is like the deep end of the pool. I don't think any of your listeners need to jump into this one today.
This is the one the rest of us just sit back and watch and try to figure out, right?
Might be better off with that, yeah. The guy Citron over at Citron Research, he named it, of course, after lemons. He has been on the right side of this trade saying people should be short this stock. But if he elects to cover now after this dramatic drop, well, then that could be one of the catalysts that drive shares higher.
Another thing we're watching is the Fed. The Fed's meeting again, their policy committee, and likely will have some sort of an announcement tomorrow. Janet Yellen usually has a news conference. And I'm reading, I can't sort of figure out what I'm reading here, because it seems to me most people expect not much to happen, but others saying that there could be a rate increase. Do you see a rate increase?
No.
Okay.
No, and I think the reason that I'm so adamant about it, Stephen, is that today we just got the latest readings, and they'll be the last major readings before the Fed ends its two-day meeting tomorrow, and that was retail sales. Retail sales for February, softer than the street expected by a large margin. And then they also revised their January sales numbers, which were pretty bad, down even further. So that is unlikely to be any kind of a catalyst for anything but staying on the sidelines for the Fed.
You know, I was going to say that the sales number goes down because we're spending less on gas, but I guess the hope is that we would take that money we're saving and spend it elsewhere?
Yes, and in some cases, there are retailers that have done well in 2016 and even ramping through the Black Friday of last year in November. But there are a host of others that are reporting very flat sales. So even though you might have Macy's, for instance, that warned and the shares were just punished and then actually reported better than expected numbers in their most recent report, there's an awful lot of other retailers, whether they're teen retailers or Gap stores or even J.W. Nordstrom, where they're saying we're managing to eke out some profit here, but it's really flat and we're not growing at the pace we'd like to. And I think that's enough to keep the Fed on the sidelines until probably the June meeting.
All right. We know you're not going to recommend Valiant to us today. Is there a stock tip you've got for us?
Sure. As far as other stocks, I was buying Teva Pharmaceutical, T-E-V-A, is one we bought today for clients. Teva is a generic pharmaceutical maker primarily. They are not in at all the same space that Valiant is as far as the serial acquisition and all the rest. They are a global pharmaceutical company. They're a $56 billion market cap. The shares are down from 72 down to, we were buying it today, just under 57 for clients. It's about 25 cents higher than that right now. And the symbol is TEVA. So we bought a fair amount of that today, and hopefully that's a good long-term trade.
Excellent. John Najarian. Follow him on Twitter at John Najarian. Great to talk to you today. We'll talk to you next week again.
Thank you, Stephen.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. We are in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Okay, I'm going over my tournament brackets. I'm going to be in a pool and looking over the names here. And I've been over the brackets a few times, and I still cannot find Marquette University. Dick Vitale, where are my Golden Eagles this year?
Well, I'll tell you, Golden Eagles better be back in the future. They were there big time when Mr. McGuire was there, certainly Al McGuire. They had some good moments this year, but they're a young basketball team, and I just can take a little time.
Hey, what?
A great young kid there, Owen Ellison.
Yeah, is he going to stick around very long?
Well, that's the big problem. You know, these kids, I think it's going to be tough to keep him around. It's sad in a way. It's one of the things I don't like about college basketball is the fact that a one and done. I think it really creates no stability. In many cases, kids aren't ready, and it's just unbelievable. I think the game would be so much better, the kids would be so much better, and everybody involved, even the NBA, would gain if these kids had a little bit more experience on a collegiate level.
I jumped right into it. Didn't even say hello to the great Dick Vitale of ESPN. I'm so glad you're joining us to talk a little basketball here. But you bring up a good point, because it seems like this year in the tournament, there aren't as many of those one-and-done sort of basketball players. This is more maybe team-oriented, a bit more veteran of a tournament.
That's a great, great point. I'll tell you, Steve, no doubt about it. I just did a big promotion here for Allstate, Mark Mayhem. In fact, I'm going to the airport, which is finished with Buzz Aldrin. He was my competition. And we talked about that in some of the interviews I did with media across the country. That has been a senior-dominated year. We don't have those instant impact dynamite. In fact, the one kid who's being rated to be the number one player in the draft and will probably go out, no doubt will go out, Ben Simmons, he's not even going to be in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
It's been a senior-dominated class, and I love it. Then you got Bryce Johnson in North Carolina, Marcus Paige, North Carolina. You think about Perry Ellis down there at Kansas. You think about Buddy Hield, unbelievable. My choice was National Player of the Year, and another guy who I give a lot of consideration and is going to get a lot of votes for National Player of the Year, Denzel Valentine. So it's been a great senior-dominated class.
You just mentioned that this All-State March Mayhem that you're in with, I think this is the first time you've challenged a human, isn't it? Buzz Aldrin this time for this year's contest.
I'll tell you this, it's tough for competition. I want to go on with the groundhog. Tony Phil last year, and also with what I did to dolphins and a longhorn. But I'm dealing with a guy with a doctorate, in aeronautical engineering. I can't even say aeronautical. And the guy's got a doctorate. So he's all that stability of statistics and probability. And we just had our big battle, his picks versus mine. Pretty similar when we get down to the final. We both ended up picking the Spartans of Michigan State. But he had a little different than me. He might win this battle. He had North Carolina, for example, beat Kentucky, and I have Kentucky beat North Carolina. He has Kansas over Oklahoma, and I have Oklahoma over Kansas. But it's a fun time. And you know, my granddaughter, she was 5 years old 2 years ago. I couldn't believe it. She picked Harvard. They go on to the Sweet 16. What did I do? I didn't even know Harvard was in the tournament. Well, I'm only teasing.
Let's go back.
It's a total guessing game. But I'm so thankful of Allstate for having it, because they donate money now to the V Foundation for Cancer, which means so much to me. And they're also donating money to the Space Center on behalf of Buzz for Space Center in Houston.
That is nice. I want to go back. You mentioned Kentucky, though, because by the time this weekend is over, either Indiana or Kentucky are going to be knocked out. They will play each other if each win their first round game, which seems to be a pretty unfair early matchup.
Well, you know, it's really unbelievable. I kept screaming at the end of the year, hey, I hope the committee puts those two together, because Kentucky and Indiana should be playing every year. They should be playing on a regular basis. But there was a little controversy when Indiana beat them at the buzzer a couple of years ago.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
But they had the great team with Anthony Davis, and Kentucky does not want to go back to Bloomington. Well, my bottom line is they got to set aside egos, the two coaches. They're the two that can make it happen. They should play every year. And I firmly believe, you know, we hear all reports that the committee sits there and the computers deal out this. Come on now. You know, and I know, that was put a match done for hoops heaven by the committee. So we're going to put those two together. And you're right. One quality team is going to the showers early. But if I'm Indiana, I'd be a little cautious. If I think about Kentucky, I'd be worried a little bit about Chattanooga. They're a lot better than what a lot of fans believe.
So we got just a minute or so left. I want to ask you, though, you know, this, I love this time of year. You know, Harvard goes to the Sweet 16 or whatever. My daughter goes to Dayton, so they've had a couple of nice runs. But so we all watch it. We all get enthused. You're the guy that we look to all year long. And then when it comes to Final Four time, you know, you're kind of watching like the rest of us. The games are on CBS. And I just wonder if that's, I mean, what your thoughts are that way? I mean, it must be a little bittersweet not to be calling the games.
Well, you know, obviously any announcer would like to be part of the tournament, but you learn in life. I've learned in life you can't have everything you want. I'd like to be really good-looking. Man, I'd like to have two eyes instead of one. I'd like to have a crop of hair that's really nice and wavy. But you go on and live. And it's been pretty good. I have no regrets. We're really involved, though, big time. Pre-game, post-game, we do a lot of analysis there. And then at the Final Four, I'll do the semifinal and the final game on ESPN International. So we're heard all over the world, not here in the USA, but all over the world. So, again, I have no regrets at all, man. I've lived a life that's exceeded every dream. Being involved with corporate groups like Allstate is unbelievable. And think about it. I'm going to get into my 13th Hall of Fame
Wow.
in 2 weeks in New Jersey, where I grew up as a kid, along with Derek Jeter, along with Call It a Gang, Bon Jovi's in already. John Stewart's going to get in with us. It's been a great night, and I'm in 13 Hall of Fames. I can't run. I can't jump. I can't shoot. I got a body by Linguini, and I'm in 13 Hall of Fames because this game and the fans have been fantastic to me. I mean, just this past weekend, chanting my name when I walked into the arena to do the Kentucky-Texas A&M game. And I may be 76, man, but I'll match my energy with any 12-year-old. Young at heart, Steve. Young at heart, as Francis Albert Sinatra used to sing.
You just wore me out in these last 8 minutes, Dick Vitale. Look, it was great to talk to you today. And we'll check in next year when Wojciechowski's got the Marquette Golden Eagles back in the tournament.
I hope you're right, Steve. I love Marquette. I had one of my greatest wins ever. The year they won the national title in 77,
yeah.
We won our 21st in a row at the University of Detroit against one of my idols, Al McGuire, up in Milwaukee. But, hey, do me one favor as well. I mentioned earlier that Allstate's going to donate money to the V Foundation. That means so much to me because, like, my goal is to raise as many dollars as I can for kids battling cancer through the Dick Vitale Gala. So far, we've raised $15 million. Not enough. This year, we're going to honor Robin Roberts, Urban Meyer, Bo Ryan. People can go to my website, DickVitaleOnline.com, and I say thank you, thank you. I love you, Allstate. March Mayhem, the best of the best. Love it, my friend. Love it.
Love to talk to you, Duke. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, Bob Kessler. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Tuesday afternoon. All right, so Dick Vitale was just on. He's in that big All-State Mayhem Challenge with Buzz Aldrin talking about his brackets. And he was talking so fast, I don't even remember who he said he picked. Maybe Philip Weiss does. Philip Weiss is the principal, the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Welcome back to the program.
Good to be here, Steve.
And thanks. So, you know, Philip is the guy who looks out for the bosses and tries to spare them unnecessary litigation and all of that. So another way of saying sometimes, well, you know, I accuse you sometimes of taking the fun out of the workplace.
But you have.
You're okay with that.
I am, as long as it doesn't go too far.
Do you remember who Vitale picked? I think it was Michigan State.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be a big risk.
No. So, but I love the fact that we have him talking about how everyone and their mother is going to be in a pool of some sort or another. And now we've got you coming in saying, yeah, but if you run an office, that might not be such a good idea.
That's right. And we're seeing the bigger the phenomenon, Steve, the bigger the risks.
But it seems to me like there's a payoff here. I mean, this is a good morale sort of thing. Get people involved. We got a little one. I know of a little one going on somewhere that, you know, we're trying to make as legal as possible. But that's what brings people. Can it be a team building thing?
It can. And in fact, in all fairness, with employers competing for employees, creating the best atmosphere is one of these compulsions to allow or even encourage March Madness. But the fact that people get very connected through the watching and the talking about the games.
Right.
Sometimes that leads them to get disconnected from the work they're supposed to be doing.
Okay, so if I run a business, and if I'm running and it's a multi-billion dollar business, let's just say, I can afford to lose a day or two if I know my workers are going to be enjoying themselves, looking forward to coming to work and knowing that they're coming to a fun spot,
yeah.
Right? Did you have some numbers? There was like, what, $2 to $4 billion in lost productivity?
Revenues, productivity, wages. Yeah. And in fact, if you could actually guarantee it would be a day or two, that'd be fine.
Okay.
What we're seeing with the clients who call us is that's what their expectation was in the beginning. The results often were very different. And so you've got these indirect costs, these productivity costs. We don't even know what they are, but we know they're enormous because we get a lot of calls in April. We see March Madness turns into April sadness in terms of some revenues. But we also see, interestingly, a lot of direct out-of-pocket costs.
Now, wait a minute. Is that one of your inside things there? March Madness leads to April sadness?
I coined that while Dickie was on.
He's
such a poet. Yeah. I had to come up with something.
Felt the pressure?
Yeah, I did. We had a client, and they assumed they would have this 1 or 2 day kind of investment
of
time. But their business was to fill out insurance forms for insurance companies. That was their client base. And they got paid per insurance form. It was a fixed amount. But the bosses said, we also want the best atmosphere.
Sure.
So we're going to encourage March Madness, a little bit of streaming, a little bit of talking, right? Change your brackets if you want to. At the end of the March period last year, they ended up with over $40,000 in unexpected overtime costs because they only could charge their clients so much. They were talking to their employees about the games. Their employees stayed late to finish the work. So you want to think about how far this is going to take you.
Okay, that's a downside. I could see that. That's a downside. So if you want to, there must be a way to harness it that even you, Philip Weiss, would encourage and say could be a good thing to do, right?
Yeah, there is. And the fact is, it's going to happen anyway.
Right.
Because 5 years ago, Steve, I think the common wisdom among lawyers, at least, who are not always the wisest, but their wisdom was, it's a red light. Don't do it at work. Don't watch it work. You know, red lights don't work.
That's like telling the kid, don't eat the cookies.
That's right. Or don't date the co-worker or don't gossip at work. These are all equally unrealistic. So instead now we're saying there's going to be some level of a green light. It just shouldn't be like a 5,000-watt bulb. And that means managers themselves have got to be careful how much they're talking about it, how much they're encouraging it. And really, the priority still got to be the business, not the brackets. We actually were just last week in a meeting. We were there to do a legal presentation, Steve. And the manager of this team, he started out with what he called bracket time, which included a recording of Hammer Time with this guy had re-recorded the lyrics himself, which is a little disturbing. And then all kinds of really beautiful graphics leading into March Madness. It was a kind of multimedia marvel what this guy put together. Then he moved to the business slides of the meeting, the stuff that really mattered, which were pretty dull, uninspiring, somber. By the time we got up to do our piece, which was the legal news, we had to re-inspire the group. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because I overheard two of the employees talking about the boss having seen his March Madness, you know, this masterpiece. And they said, well, we don't know where this guy's priorities are. It's not necessarily us or the bottom line. So at some point, you're giving too big a green light and you want to let people know we're here to do work. Think about break time. Think about appropriate places for people to watch and talk March Madness.
All right. That's Philip Weiss, the managing director of Seyfarth Shaw at Work. Well, who do you have in your brackets?
I can't mention, but if Dickie V said Michigan State, I'm reconsidering.
Thanks for coming in. It's always great to see you.
Pleasure.
You're listening to The Business Lunch. We're here on 720 WGN. It's 12:49. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info Chicago to talk about openings and closings in the city and the suburbs. Andrew, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Steve.
Managing, tell me your title again, your editor.
I'm senior editor at DNAinfo.com.
Okay. And you've got a tan, which explains why you weren't here last week.
Right, I was in Florida.
Right. Oh, looking at some openings and closings, were you?
Eating at a lot of restaurants, I will say that.
Well, that's good. I want to talk about this idea of a sushi burrito. But before we do that, let's go to Mariano's in Bronzeville.
Sure.
Now, I cannot think of a business that has come into the market the way Mariano's did, with the sort of goodwill. They seem to be making all the right moves. I mean, I do not have a Mariano's within striking distance. It's kind of within striking distance, but I've got other choices closer. I made a point the other day. I'm like, I got to check one out, you know? So I went down and scoped it out, chucked the Mariano's down in the Northbrook area. And everyone wants a Mariano's near them. It's sort of like it's like Portillo's. Everyone wants a Portillo's
right.
and a Mariano's.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a company that's, like you say, has been really growing. And I think one of the more interesting things about it is they're really investing pretty heavily in the city. They have about 30 stores in the Chicago area. 10 of them are in Chicago. So they've got, you know, a third of their stores invested in the city limits, including this one in Bronzeville that's going to open later this year at King Drive and Pershing, so about 39th Street.
And is this a new construction? I think probably.
Yeah, this is a new construction. It's on a vacant piece of property.
They're bold, too, you know, Mariano's. I was talking to Bob Mariano once when they were first coming in. Telling him my own personal story where I thought he could maybe plant a store.
Uh-huh.
And he had talked about a spot. I don't want to give away too much, not that I would, but you know, there was a spot he was looking at, which was right across the street from another established store. And I said, well, would you want to be that close? And he's like, yeah, we don't care. You know, we're going to build what we need to build, and we're going to do very well.
Well, you might feed off the other guy's business, too.
Right.
But, I mean, Bronzeville is probably a very good idea for them. It's a very hot neighborhood, seen about a 5% increase in its population in the last 5 years. So he's moving into an area that's actually growing. But interesting thing is he wants the store to reflect the heritage of the area. So what they're doing is they're putting murals of famous Bronzeville residents and former residents on the side of the store.
Lou Rawls.
Right, we know him. Nat King Cole.
I know him.
Louis Armstrong.
I've heard of Louis Armstrong. This is like a musical tribute.
Gwendolyn Brooks.
Gwendolyn Brooks, poet. Okay, a little poetry.
Right, now a few of them I maybe was a little less familiar with. I know Raisin in the Sun, the great movie and play.
Right.
Lorraine Hansberry, the author of that, she's going to be on the side. Person I did not know, Catherine Dunham, who was a pop
dancing, right?
Right, popular dancer in the 40s and 50s. Ding, 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 ding. That's 5 points for you.
That's what I do. I go home and watch stars at night.
Horace Caton?
Horace Caton. No, I don't know that one.
Black Metropolis? You ever heard of that?
Yeah, I have heard of that.
Yeah, that's a book about blacks in the first half of the 20th century, focusing in on the first 50 years of the 20th century and how blacks existed in Chicago.
I like that.
Yeah, so there's quite a few. Ida B. Wells.
Ida B. Wells, I know.
A lot of people know the name, but they don't know who exactly she was.
Well, you know what?
I know you are going to tell me right now, right?
No, I might be one of those people.
Oh, she was a journalist. And
I didn't know that.
She wrote a lot about lynchings in the South and how it affected the population and the nation as a whole.
I did not know that.
I'm glad. 5 points for me.
That's like 6 or 7 points for you. Thanks for that.
Well, I looked it up before I came over.
I'm sure you probably did, but I'm going to congratulate you with a sushi burrito.
Okay.
Two of us can go up to Lakeview after the show and what?
Right, 2904 North Broadway. That's the name of the store, but these sushi burritos are apparently a hot new thing across the country. They're described as the convenience of a burrito and the freshness of sushi. And they started a few years ago in where else but San Francisco. And instead of a tortilla, they use seaweed. That's kind of the tortilla part. That's the wrap part.
I don't know if you really
like nori, I guess it's called.
Yeah.
And it has rice and fish, and some have meat in them. And
I like the store in Washington, D.C. It's called Sushi Rito. That sounds Japanese.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Right. So $7.50 in Lakeview will get you a sushi burrito with tuna, salmon, or shrimp, and the owner says the best thing about these things, you can eat them in the car.
Well, that's the thing, right, for sushi that doesn't work so well.
Right.
But I kind of missed on that, because when I was just reading about it, mm-hmm. I was thinking it was going to be in a flour tortilla.
No. So that, I guess that's what makes
it. So it's not quite as fusion as they make it sound.
It's like a giant piece of sushi, which has some sushi owners concerned that people are going to start thinking that a sushi burrito is actually sushi, and when they go to a sushi restaurant and they get these little finger-sized sandwiches, they're going
to
be
not going back to that joint. They're ripping me off.
Supposed to be as big as my head.
Wow. So this has done well in other areas.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's just this fascination with sushi. I don't quite understand it myself.
You're not a sushi guy?
If I'm going to go out to a restaurant and I have a choice between sushi and a burrito, I'm all over that burrito, man.
I'm totally the same way.
Mexican food.
Yeah. I don't do sushi at all.
Yeah.
I've never, one time in my life I've gone out for sushi.
I'm always hungry about an hour later. That's the problem with sushi.
Well, it's beautiful, and it's even more beautiful, I guess, so they just wrap it like a...
Like a piece of seaweed. Seaweed, you know, the green... substance, and it kind of looks like a burrito, but it has a lot of rice in it, like a piece of sushi has, you know, often has a lot of rice. And so it's if you like a big burrito made with seaweed and lots of rice, you should check out Sushi Burrito at 2904 North Broadway.
Now, the piece in DNA Info talks about some other fusion places, including Torta House, which is a Mexican-German eatery featuring German pork tortas, Wiener Schnitzel, and bratwurst. I think really that what we're saying is anything, if you can Mexicanize anything, and then we're more likely to buy it.
Does it come with tortilla chips? Does it come with salsa? That's always the big question.
What would
right?
be the German guacamole? I have no idea.
Some sort of potato smashed bits,
that's
probably.
That's what it would be. I think it would be mashed potatoes. All right. You work on that. Bring back a report next week. Andrew Herman is an editor at DNA Info Chicago, and these stories can be found at
DNAinfo.com.
Good to see you. We'll see you again soon.
All right.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.